pretty lady to meet you in court, and thank you all for coming out tonight. I'm going to start off with some new poems, this first one is called Silence. Silence. Seeking perches on the balcony rails, finding the solemn notes of the steel girder, damping into wooden boards as little symphonies splutter on the tin chair. The rain is falling, picking out each surface and calling it back. If a poem displaces the weight of its own sound and water, then let these loosened drops brim out over the edge of night, evaporate to fall again, and call back a sonar image of where I lie without you, and let a singing line begin.
Can you hear me back, Dawson? I do not mind.
It's good that the mic can hear you. Mine can hear you well, but it's more objective.
Yeah. And this next poem I wrote after I met an artist in Dublin. He was telling me about this amazing project he was doing, and he goes out along the Liffey like at night and collects rubbish and stuff, and then he was actually building his own gilding. He was actually covering it in gold, which I just thought that was an amazing idea. I never asked him actually how he afforded the gold, you know, another story. But it kind of, the other thing was, I suppose where it ties up for me as well, is that I would have had a couple of friends who used to do the Liffey swim. So the two kind of came together somewhere in my mind, and there's moments of those. It's called Liffey Swim. The light on my forehead winks mud as I move along the Liffey bed in the 3 a.m. settling of the city. The arc of a bike wheel reveals itself in a shroud of fronds and slime. A lugworm inhales to the bounce of a lone shout off the granite of key walls, where I lay my palm as a far star exhales in a speck of mica, which I pick and place on the outstretched fingertip of the city. This next poem is written, I used to live up in Donegal, but I went back up recently and I spent a bit of time and I did an archaeology class around Scarcon Kill. And it was an amazing, the guy who was giving it was incredible, and he kept trying to get us to use our imagination to rebuild the cairns and, you know, see how it had been. So again, this poem very much came out of that. It's called Archaeology Class. The air is porous in this midge-hungry field, bog bounded by dry stone within which squats a bath. Inside the toppled portal tomb, a riverbed rock, scoured and scooped and smooth. Great wheels of silage yearn to turn on invisible axes. Picture the capstone, behemoth, erratic, dislodged by earthquakes. In the lactose light, a fellow lolling in the bath might call for a lever long enough to reinstate it as water sloshes over the enamel rim. It's all words, says one, as we reassemble the rest of the cairn through language of cyst and corbel. Speaking each stone of the dry wall back onto the cairn, and then just as they abut each other, that older metamorphic tongue seeps through. I recently got this brilliant book, which is a dictionary of humorous quotations. So of course, I leave to the kind of the bank ones and the writing ones, and I'll have to read some of these. They're so funny. There was one by G.K. Chesterton who said, "Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese." Or there's another lovely one, "No coward said about a poet." He said, "We're just waiting for the moment his poetic license expires." And actually, my two favourite, one of them is Douglas Adams, and he says, "I love deadlines." He said, "I like the whooshing sound they make as they fly by." and there's another one actually, which is, my advice to aspiring writers, marry money. They were quite good. But this next poem was found, I live quite near Dalkey Quarry, and I was up there walking with them, and I found this amazing book, which was the Dalkey Quarry Rock Climbing Guide. I kind of knew I should leave it there for the person who left it there, but the words, the descriptions of the climbs were just unbelievable, so I read it to it. This poem is for the person whose book I took. I didn't know. So it's called Committing is the Crux, and it is actually literally, it's a fine poem, and the words, the sentences are just taken from this Dalkey Quarry Rock Climbing Guide. Committing as a Crook, and it's for the unknown climber whose copy of the Doherty Quarry Rock Climbing Guide I found and took home. Put your faith in friction and traverse right, as Samson climbs the diagonal flake. Step left below the overhang, the blind grope for a hidden jug. Triptych, worrying. Start just right at subpoena. Hoochie coochie colour. This steep groove follows Charleston to where it steepens, and a series of snappy pulls lead past the borehole to the top. Walton Tilda, who takes a broken, choosy line, make a very committing step back into the corner, committing to the cross. Yeah, actually, I'm going to read another poem, kind of similar. I find this poem in a sense also, but it's, I was saying, I lived for a while up in Donegal, kind of near across the Harrison to Tara, and there's an island called Inishbofin. It's very small, and people used to live there all year round, but they just live there in the summer now. But I spent a bit of time there, and it's an amazing place, but I kind of gathered island sayings, and there's two, it's called island sayings. Scrapings of 9 burnt pots will put a dry cow back in milk. Boil and drink the roots of the yellow tomato to get shot of bunions. At night, we know the horses were back from Gertha Hurt. We hear their freshly shod hooves sing out on the shingle. The tide runs on old time here. Honing the Sweetie Arashanshuk as she drives goats outside the door. I texted my son today. Asked him to bring milk from the mainland. Yeah, I might read another couple of Donegal poems actually. This was written after seeing. It was written after seeing a play. I don't know if any of you saw Donal Kelly and Trevor Knight. It's called Catalpa. And it was one of the most incredible pieces of theatre I've ever seen. Yeah. And I saw it in a little town hall in Donegal. And to me, it just seemed to be, this is what theatre was. They came into this little town hall and just transformed the place to one actor and one musician. But what happened was, I was showing, they were friends of mine, I was showing Ryan's doing well afterwards, and it did actually happen that we were looking over a bridge and we spent about 20 minutes going with a fish, no, it's not a good bag. And this went on, and but it seemed to me the kind of transformations that had happened on stage were happening in the river as well, so that was where the poem came from. And it's called Performance, and it's for Donal O'Kelly and Trevor Knight. The two men leant in deep over the bridge, hands on stone and elbows crooked for support. They peered further in, mesmerised by what they saw. It is a fish, said one. But I am a stone, said the fish, mottled and still in the sunlit water, the taut muscle of my body as steady as my neighbours who are sunk in silt. Around and over us the water flows. Only my spine is so supple that my tail wavers in the space and moves from its impression of rocks. Until then, movement is only light and shadow. I am the fish of the plastic bag, snagged on a low rock in the river. Give me one fixed point and the coursing water will flesh out a body for me. Mottle me with weed and refracted light so I become fish that is stone that is fish. Till your eyes reach frayed and streaming edges which could not be tail. This alone gives me away, but till then, substance is current and light. God, we're fools, the men laughed as they walked away. City slickers who can't even tell fish from stone, from rubbish in a stream. Back under the bridge and the river coursed on. Stone became fish, turned to plastic and spoke. I think they put on a play last night. I heard that in the dark gas heater hum of an old church hall, the audience peered up at that man who became gold. And as his shoulders rose, his elbows led the wingtips of his wrists to hover over seas and in the sky of the stage. He would squawk and flap, wave flop, wing flip, till he alit, when with a pivot of a foot and a single gesture that possessed him, became in turn sailor, lover, father, mother, convict, crew, and governor. Most beautiful of all, though, he was child to the father. As her voice rang out from the altered muscles of his throat, pop a song. I, said the song. And I heard, said Plastic Fish, how the other sat deep in a pool of blue light, and his fingers sent storm and rain, horse hoof and oar creak, to reverberate through the hall and each body there, that in the moment the whale let out a discarnate scream, it crackled up each spine, so they smelt salt and fear and dying whale. They filed out silent, bemused in finding earth when their feet thought they would meet the deep roll of the ocean. Read another. It's kind of funny, and I'm just wondering if this is where it came from. From Paul Emon, he said, poetry can be flammable because you don't set a whale on fire. And I kind of was thinking, because I do actually have a bit of a story about poetry and fires and stuff, so I was like, oh my god, has he heard? No, I don't know. But I wrote a poem about Prometheus, and quite soon after I had a house fire, and I often wonder, kind of, I don't know. But this is. Called Aspects of Prometheus. I squint at the brave February sun and try to gauge how he stole fire. Did he approach the Vulcan's forge with a flammable grass tight, eyes watering from molten lava that exhaled with gloop and hiss? Or perhaps it was a splinter of more solid fuel he took, like they once did here from a visitor's hearth. Here, routine still centers on fire, which I awkwardly follow, bending over the squat range to rake the ashes first thing each morning, bringing out warm cinders which gust towards muckish. Later, as I watch hot coal glimmer and shoot stars in the slack, I recall that fire only became mortal when he brought it back, mortal like us and must be tended. Yeah, I want to read actually another. I suppose a lot of my work is kind of will be about particular places, and I think it's probably because I moved quite a lot, so you're always trying to kind of. I think your sight is quite. When you move somewhere, you're kind of quite alert to the place, I mean, because you're trying to read it. And this was called. I lived in South London for a while. And I remember when I moved over, because I'd been in Donegal before that, I spent a lot of time kind of thinking, well, the place names are really boring because there's no translation to be done. You know the way in Ireland you're walking around and you see the translation and you're going, well, is it a transliteration? Is it a meaning that's been translated? So it's an awful lot of food for thought. So I'm walking around London thinking, well, that's really boring because they're just there. There's no translation to be done. But of course, the more you get to know an area, the more you realise that there is always kind of a prehistory to names. And that's what this poem would come out of. Now, I actually mentioned a couple of the streets, and I did discover afterwards, because I love the sound of their names, and I discovered afterwards that one of them is actually the biggest sort of drug dealing street in South London, but I didn't know that. Called Topography. My feet walk the lost topography of a South London suburb, through burnt ash copse and St. John's Wood, where tower blocks squat and lorries pick up dust. Down verdant hills to long-dripped vales, where buttons whine to a halt. Days when I'm dumb, it is all I can do to collect names, which strung together make a necklace of this city that might yet ease the braced musculature of my throat. Friendly streets and stillness lane, silver rolls and nightingale walk. Beyond the Matalan and the MFI, the Tesco and the KFC, between the calf and the car park, runs Silk Mills Path. Listen, under the noise of the traffic on the busy interchange is the whir of a loom. Under the trundle of the train is the clack of a shuttle. And that dust in my mouth as I walk under the junction, that dust is lint. I suppose actually I was coming up on the train today and started off as one of those lovely autumn days, and then it integrated rapidly. But I remember it was in July, a couple of years ago, which was very like the weather today. And I remember sitting, I'll read the poem, and it's pretty satisfying. It's called That July. That July was all portent of autumn. Even on warm days, the sky hung low. It spat and spilt on the darkened town. And the speckle of taillights blurred red, as breath condensed on the windows of the bus, where I traced words and shapes with my fingers, watched beads of sweat dribble and gather a strip of black rubber by my elbow. Staring out at this muggy universe of steaming hair and wet damp clothes, I think I am back at school. I smell new copies and the bus becomes an open page. Read one or two new poems. This was written for, my new book, I kind of decided it was going to be a collection of love poetry, and sort of a mixture of romantic love, and, but also, you know, for friendship and different things. And this was written for a friend of mine who I hadn't, we'd been very close as teenagers, but then we met again, kind of, and it was just lovely because it just seemed to, we sort of clicked straight back in. So this poem is called Like a Sleeve or a Book for Teresa. Like a sleeve, the years have been turned inside out and fit as we sit in a cafe under the railway bridge. Or more like a book, a simple origami book I want to make. Take one sheet of A4 on which two teenagers walk down the road toward the seafront, who only stop speaking as they pass under the damp and dreep of the railway line before the sky flickers ahead to meet the horizon. Now double it twice and cut along a single crease. Unfold, placate, so each facet is a page that accordions out, and the illuminated stories of 25 years tumble from its pages. This again was another poem kind of written for two friends of mine who got married in Mayo, and the poem sort of came out of me walking around before the actual ceremony, and it's called Ceremony for Breeze on Roy. The sun is besotted with the air. The air is heady with its scent after rain. The hedgerows are ringing out in hawthorn. Birdsong spills from the sky while the moy in spate rushes over weirs, all foamy exultation and chats with the stones. But the mountains hold their wish. Rain the horizon, steady in the cloud and light shape shifting all around. Call it stillness. The intake of breath as a ring is eased onto a finger and words spoken. As constant as the ox and fragile as a mayfly spinning over a lit pool. Yeah, this is another poem which was actually, it was really sweet, it was somebody I was working with and she wanted a birthday present for a friend of hers, so she commissioned me to write a poem, which I was delighted about. I think there should be more of that going on. And it's called Gifts for Justine. This bright morning, early October, the park is hoarding light, and each tangled bramble bulges with berries, luscious with rain and the year's late summer. Like capsules they wait, pick and the juice of stored sunshine bursts into the mouth. There is an extra second in this year, gifted because of a hair's breadth shift in the tilt of the earth. May it be a pebble dropped in a still lake, a wish that ripples through each sweet minute and on. I love that even further down, below the loving root of friends, deep down even under Old English awaits free. And also that the rounded vowels, back of the throat warming, a charamagarad, emerges from deep within the solar plexus. There is no path. We make the path by walking, at each step rooted in the body, until the woods begin to thin. At last, ahead a clearing, lit with the smiles of those who love us and time ahead. I'll finish up with two poems, and one of them was from a trip I made to Morocco a good few years ago actually. And I remember being inside a Quranic school, and just there was something extraordinary that the guide was saying, that it can be forbidden to paint the likeness of a human form basically because you're kind of imitating God. But it seemed to me, then I was listening to the call to prayer, and the two things kind of came together in this poem. It's called Breath. Verses from the Quran encircle us, an intense calligraphy, glazed onto walls dense with cedar carving and white plaster. In the center, a fountain which stipples the air with water. It is forbidden, the guide tells us, to paint the likeness of the human form or carve it from stone, unless you can breathe life into it, and who but God? But listen, the heat is punctuated by the call to prayer. It rises, transient through the air, reverberating in the base of the throat, welling up all ah, each vowel created deep within the lung, consonants by the muscle of the tongue and hinge of jaw, so breath has some word or word breath, and what is scripted becomes. And then the last poem, it came from, I did a reading down, it's Afri, who do kind of quite interesting things, and there was a woman on from the Seed Bank, the Irish Seed Savers organisation, but she told this extraordinary story. I didn't know that every country apparently has a repository of seeds for their agriculture, and before the Iraq War, you know, which kind of birth of agriculture, somebody, bizarrely enough, the seed bank in Iraq was actually in Abu Ghraib, and it, they kind of knew it would probably be bombed, so what they did was they actually, one person actually literally put a kind of sample of all the seeds into a black box and sent it off to Syria. That story just kind of, yeah, blew me away actually. And then, so what I did is I tried to imagine myself into the voice of the guy who, or the person who had done that, and it's called Iraqi Seed Bank. In an airless room in Abu Ghraib, my colleagues and I begin to sift for 7 strains of wheat, and know without words that the first must be from Jarmon near Kirkuk. We pick the modest seed of einkorn, sown 8,000 years and more, so each thresh and winnow sing of the birth of cultivation, and place it in a pocket of the black box. Next, wild licorice and tamarind that flourish by the Tigris, linseed from Erbil, sesame from Mosul, millet from Tikrit, 6 raw barley with a language as dense as the Sumerian script, and all the unread literatures of the cuneiform, 2 raw barley of the people of Babylonia, and on until this box bound for Syria is full. In an airless room in Abu Ghraib, I name each seed 1,000 times, so each in turn shall bear 1,000 more.